up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Hello and welcome back to Action Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. We have Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 52. NASDAQ futures up 305. Yet another rally and yet another hopes for a peace deal. Why am I starting to think this has nothing to do with a peace deal? But that's just me being grumpy. But shouldn't be grumpy. Had a good weekend. Memorial Day weekend's always a little bit of a downer because we have, I mean, it's obviously a very, could be our most somber holiday, although a lot of places don't look at it like that, but I always did, and I think most people do. Do we have Professor Carl?
Oh, you do have Professor Carl, but no, most people don't.
No, it's a Memorial Day sale or something, you know, type of thing.
Well, it's a good excuse to drink beer.
Yeah.
And grill some hamburgers.
Well, that's a good thing.
Well, in my case, I smoked a nice hunk of brisket, so you know that wasn't so terrible, right?
Well, we had a nice dinner at my brother's, the younger generation there, and we had a little spiel regarding our families giving in the war, and I said, you know what, nobody wants to pay any attention, and I never even gave it.
Well, yeah. I put up a column over the weekend that was for that. It was entitled, You Cannot Appeal to God. It's on the no advertising side of the blog because Google would put me in the gulag if I was to attempt to put that where people could read it and be compensated by advertising as opposed to actual people forking up money and contributions. In other words, you know, the model that we used to have on the internet before the collusive nature of all of these firms decided that, oh, no, free speech. Yes, you, Congress shall make no law. However, we shall get together and violate 100-plus-year-old laws, which are supposed to get our corporations destroyed and our executives thrown in prison for 10 years. But... that doesn't happen anymore. So therefore, if you say something we don't like, off you go. All right. By the way, the entire reason that if you think about Memorial Day as a what it is, how many people these days sit back and say God is both necessary and sufficient to solve these kinds of problems? I saw that all over the place in the so-called mainstream media this weekend from people on the supposed conservative right.
Do the people on the conservative right or the people on the left even know where the hell they are anymore?
Well, let me just point something out. All those people who think that is in some way sufficient, okay, go talk to Irina. You're going to have to hold a seance because, of course, she had a throat slit on a train. By somebody who'd been arrested several dozen times and yet nobody locked him up. Or, for that matter, the woman who had gas doused on her on a CTA train up by you guys had basically, same basic bottom line story was essentially the same. The guy had been arrested two dozen times for felonies, and rather than go to prison, You can't do that. His skin color is wrong, so therefore we have to, you know, that by God, that's racist if we actually lock up violent people. And right up until they do something like that, at which point the...
Well, we also have an awful lot of crazy white people that we know are going to do something, but they haven't done it yet, and then we can't do anything about that either, and then they go and do
It's all over the place, okay? There's always an excuse.
Oh, yeah. There's always an excuse.
I mean, it's like this thing about no cash bail. I don't know how many people actually have thought that one through, but the entire point of a cash bail requirement is that if you violate the terms, you lose something. Something expensive.
Well, it was way more than that back in the day, because you had to go to a bail bondsman and you borrowed money from him.
Chief, I get that.
Yeah, well, not everybody else does. That's why I'm explaining it.
Well, and by the way, the 10% is typically the bail bondsman's fee.
Right.
So you never get that back.
Right, but he has a skin in the game and going to find you so the other people don't have to.
Well, not only that, but if you abscond or do something else, if you commit another crime while you're out on bond, whatever collateral you put up goes poof. Okay, so when the collateral is nothing, and you cut the ankle monitor off and go do something else evil. By the way, I saw a statistic of something like a quarter of all the people that are out on non-cash bond in your fine town.
I think that's wrong. I think that's wrong.
Have absconded.
I think that's wrong.
Well,
some of the attorneys I know claim that the thing is actually pretty tight, and they have a few issues, but not as many as everybody says they have.
Well, okay, you know what? And you have these attorneys that are very interested and invested in having this program continue.
No, they're not. No, they're not.
Sure, they are.
No, they aren't.
Where do they get their clients?
Well, they have clients, but. The everything, you're not going to get me to disagree that the system is all balled up, but the fact that not very many people really want to sit down and find out where it's all balled up. First of all, you have, where can you start? You have, as Otto Kerner went to jail for actually publishing back in the 60s.
Yeah,
we've essentially created a permanent underclass, which we never should have done. Now, if you actually address that. I'm talking about a long-term solution, which isn't going to help our conversation. But,
right.
But we're never going to admit that or address that. And I'm not talking about just color. I'm talking about every place.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and it's getting worse and worse by the day.
Well, yeah, and the reason is you ran out of people in certain underclasses to exploit.
Well, you also have the we've gone from a lot of people being poor that never worked to people that are working and are poor,
as I said, you ran out of people to exploit in the in the okay, his skin's dark, right? So now the game is, and oh, by the way, if the correlation here is shocking, if you look at it, among the large tech related companies, IBM, Google, et cetera, okay, go down the list. Isn't it interesting that all of them are of Indian descent, essentially all of them, and 40% of the people working in that field in Silicon Valley are Indian? They're not Americans, okay? Now, how does that happen? Because you're talking about a group of people that are 2 or 3% of the American population, and yet the overrepresentation is clear evidence of discriminatory conduct, which, by the way, is illegal. And
well,
yet,
I'm gonna say that a lot of the discriminatory conduct.
Wait. It's economically driven, though. We're not talking about something. And why is it economically driven? Because we created a program called H-1Bs, and the people who are here on those programs are essentially slaves. However, in the process of doing this, we then let them bring their wife over here and their kids over here. And those people are not bound by those same constraints, at least technically. Okay. Then we went even further and we allowed them to do things like
take out 30-year mortgages when they're here on two-year visas. Now, how does that...
But you also have an awful lot... By the way, I want to get into some other stuff here, so we kicked it. But you also have, for instance, the people who live next door to Audrey are from India. Okay.
Yeah.
The guy works in a hospital doing something, and the wife does the same thing. She's a research chemist or something or other.
Yeah.
And they've been here, I'm sure they're citizens. They have the strongest family life. They were like families were in the 50s.
Chief, that's not the point.
But my point is, you point at everybody who's Indian. You can't just say that because of this group. This particular group, the kids, the nicest kids, when the parents say jump, they say how high. They've never gotten in trouble. They've gotten straight A's all the way through. Now, the reason why those kids are doing real well is not because they're here on an H-1B visa.
No.
Because the family is strong as get out, and the parents are really good parents.
Which is utterly irrelevant if those two adults, displaced Americans, that could have had those jobs. And now you have this, you have all, so what have you done here? You took, over the space of several decades, okay, Obama was the last nail in this coffin, but he was hardly the first one, when he federalized all the student lending.
So you're saying the Puritans should have shut the door on everybody, or what?
Oh, wait a minute. You can't finish. You should not be, as an American company, you want to operate in America, you want to be listed on an American stock exchange. You don't want to be listed on American stock exchange, go get listed on the stock exchange in Russia, and I don't give a damn what you do. You're listed on an American stock exchange, and you lay off 10,000 Americans, and you hire 10,000 H-1Bs, you go to prison.
Wait a minute. Well, you don't even have to be an American firm anymore to be if there's money involved at all. We used to have a guy.
Chief, yeah. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know, but this is all.
My answer to this is you're out of the NASDAQ, the S&P, or the Russell.
Oh, come on. We put the day. I don't know if you were on the show yet. I think you were. The day they put, was it Baidu on there? And I go, wait a minute.
Look, I'm not defending any of that crap either, okay?
You had all this crap with your buddy Bezos.
My buddy, yeah, okay. You mean the guy that I'd like to hang?
Who's Google?
That's Sergey. That's Mr. India. Yeah.
Well, you couldn't have.
But he wasn't. Originally these firms weren't. Okay. IBM was.
Okay. But where I'm going with this is you used to have the stock on the New York Stock Exchange. Yeah. Used to have to be voting stock. Now all these guys get A and B shares.
And you think that's bad? You take a look at Mr. Wonderful Immigrant Musk, who's about to take X public. Okay. His SpaceX stuff. Right, you want to talk about abusive share structures?
Carl, Musk is not. He may happen to be a citizen here, but he is a citizen of the world. He's the knight in shining armor. He is above any citizenship, any place. If you haven't figured that out, which I think you have, he has nothing to do with the U.S. other than it's a place to make money.
Oh, what you mean a place to steal money?
He could be Harold Janine's nephew.
Make money, steal money. Because that is exactly what he did through forced subsidies with Tesla and everything else he's ever touched.
And we bought it.
I don't know about how bought. I was forced to pay for someone else's Tesla.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Because I didn't buy it. I had it shoved up my butt.
I get that.
Okay, and so did you.
But, you know... Can we shift gears for just a hair as the market is making, new highs again today? And yet another peace plan.
Oh, well, okay. So, since that's the topic of the day, and it should be, okay, as appropriate.
Well, it's a topic every day. If there's a peace plan, we're right back to where we were when the war started.
Well, actually, we're worse.
Probably worse.
No, not probably.
Well, we don't know the details yet, but probably.
Okay, so here's this is the insanity of this administration, and not only this administration, but a whole bunch of other ones too. All right, But the latest thing with this nonsense about, well, you know, we got a solution to that, whatever. No, you don't. Okay. First off, as I pointed out when this thing started, these guys are Persians. They're not. Their favorite activity is not screwing goats. They're engineers to a large degree, and they're not stupid. They've also been at war in one form or another for millennia.
The people I've met from Iran have been very well educated, very nice, and very nonviolent.
Well, they're very nonviolent right up until you screw with them, and then, as you would expect, maybe not so much. Okay, there's plenty of crazies in every religious practice. All right, you can find it. All you got to do is turn over a rock, and you'll find some.
Well, the religion is just. It's just a cloud for just another dictatorship, kind of extreme right dictatorship.
It's a foil. Yeah. Okay, in one form or another. Whatever. I get all that.
The Russia thing was economic. No, it wasn't. It was power. I mean, come on.
Yeah. All right, but here's the thing that's going on here. The Iranians have figured out, because they've got a brain in their head, the same thing that Kim Jong-un in North Korea figured out, which is that the way you stop people from blowing up your crap whenever they feel like it is to have the ability to smack them in the face if they really do it, all right, and make it hurt. And that's something that, whether you like it or not, no nation that has had that capability has been effed with since World War II. By the way, Ukraine gave it up.
Yeah, look what happened to them. Yeah, look what happened to them.
Yeah, look what happened to them, right? But they had it and gave it up.
Well, plus they are, and I am not for these guys, as you well know, but they're surrounded by everybody around them's got it.
Well, but doesn't matter.
Are we ever going to admit that Pakistan has it? Are we ever going to admit that Israel has it? Are we ever
Pakistan is notoriously has it. They set a couple of them
off. But they're not. You're not going to get Trump or Biden or Obama to say that.
No, that's. I don't think anybody tries to deny that Pakistan has them.
You don't deny. You just don't talk about it.
Well, but people do try to say, well, you know, maybe Israel has them.
But you're not going to get a U.S. president to say, gee, maybe the Iranians, as bad as they are, want to have a nuclear bomb because everybody around them's got one.
Because everybody else has one. Yeah. Right. Well, the other thing, you know, I mean, and oh, by the way, the Israelis stole the original seed material from us.
Well, no kidding.
Duh. Okay. So the Iran at least manufactured it. but they're by no stretch of the imagination are they 2 weeks away from from having something functional.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, right. And Saddam had them too. And you know, look how full of crap that turned out to be. The thing that is interesting about this particular circumstance, though, and I keep talking about it. Nobody wants to admit that this is where this is going, but it is. Is that in the 19th, and you're old enough, most people are not, but you're old enough to remember it, in the 1970s, the Arab oil embargo lasted 5 months. Okay, that's all. It was over in 5 months. And they started exporting oil again and selling it just like they had been before. The problem is that our mismanagement of that event across multiple administrations and across multiple things meant that we basically got it in the shorts in terms of economic impact for 8 years. And it didn't actually clear until after the first midterm elections of Reagan's first term, 1982. It was the reason, the economic pain from it, is the reason that he got drubbed in the House in said midterm elections. All right? And that is very well understood by anybody who's paid any attention to anything. And by the way, I grew up and came of age during this period of time.
Okay, but the oil embargo was just the icing on the cake to a 10-year monetary policy to put us in the hole.
Oh, you mean like what we've been doing for the last 10?
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about. That's what I wanted to talk about this morning, actually. We lead in real quick. We have some time. We had a group up from Mexico. We did a lot of work in Mexico years ago. It's in the 90s.
Yeah.
And they were putting together their own exchanges. So we were a couple of us. I didn't go. My brother did, and Dr. J did. John Najarian went. And they would have spent some time down there lecturing and, you know, essentially teaching them how to put an exchange together.
Yeah.
Back when we were young.
I was going to say, that would seem very difficult, but apparently it is.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, we weren't going to go through the whole, you know, deliveries and things like that, which is very, very complicated. But
well, yeah, yeah.
So the guys are up here, and we had a, you know, I didn't ask who the hell everybody was, but there were some older dudes there that I could tell were pretty up the chain. And I said, it just so happened that week they had devalued the peso.
Mm-hmm.
So on Friday night, we would bring everybody over here to the Excelsior. We were served very, very strong drinks. We sat down at a table about 15 people, and, you know, we're bullshitting. And I said, by the way, I feel bad for you guys, you know, devaluing your currency this week. And the guy goes, what do you mean? I go, what do you mean? What do I mean? And he says, well, anybody who's in the know knew it was going to happen. And you move your money offshore that night, and when you move it back the next day, you're 10% richer than the guy next door. And I go, whoa. And since then, I've kind of paid attention, and this is not a shot against anybody in terms of who they are and their religion, but in Mexico, sort of like we're getting here, stealing money from other Mexican people is like a national sport. And now, as we see that today, that statement of that guy, look at the market today, look at the Iran war, look at Japanese. We are at all-time highs after essentially a huge screw-up. I won't say, you know, whatever. In Japan, we talk on the show and you talk in all the newspapers, TV, whatever, about how screwed up the country is because of the oil prices going up and inflation gouging the average Japanese person. By the way, their market's at record high. This follows the COVID thing, where it was a depression here for really 3 years, and at the end of the day, the market was at record highs. So all this, everything that happens is, in the immortal words of Rahm Emanuel, never waste a good crisis.
Yeah.
These crises are being used to do exactly what they did in Mexico, only did that in one night. You use it as an excuse to pump money in the system and totally separate 2-5% of the population, a little bit more here because you got the 401ks and the IRAs, so you bring some people along with you. It's used to absolutely separate those people from the rest of the society. And it's happened now so many times that nobody can tell me I'm wrong. Well, once or twice, okay, I'll roll with it, but 3-4 times, wait a minute, I'm too old of a cat to get screwed by a kitten at this point. I mean, you can't tell me that people are gleefully dealing, as we see Micron up another $45 today, another 6%. They've got how many shares outstanding, a couple of billion or something? It's incredible, and yet you've just, and everything we've talked about here this morning, it seems like we're all over the place. It's not. You've got a permanent underclass.
Yeah,
that somehow or another you got to. If you want to, it's gonna be a lot of work to get people out of there, if you want to. But I don't think anybody wants to really. Because,
well, yeah, Chief. But part of the here's the.
But they're never gonna make enough money, even if you grab 15 people out of whatever area you want, be it the south side of Chicago, be it western Pennsylvania, be it Mississippi, and train them to do any kind of a decent job. They're never gonna make enough money to be able to afford the stuff that's going to cost here 5 years from now.
Right, but here's... all right, you understand that, I understand that, but here's the problem with this. This is the reason that there is a massive crash in the offering when it comes to asset
prices. I don't know this it's going to happen.
Oh, okay, you're wrong, and here's why. This is the same exponential pattern. Exponents are a mathematical fact, and there isn't any way around them.
By the way, I agree with you, but it should already have sort of happened.
No, not necessarily. Okay, but the reason that it's not supposed to be allowed, the entire reason you have a body of law that is supposed to prevent this sort of stuff, is supposed to be enforced. Okay, of course, what do we
spend why? Those are the people that are making the money.
Chief, why do we spend most of our time talking about it not being on this show? And that would, well, at least when I'm on, and that would be the primary reason, right? Because it's not. Okay, but here's
you got a president trading stock. He's going to stop it.
I get that. He's buying NVIDIA while he's picking up the CEO and taking him over to China, for Christ's sakes. All right. I mean, if you or I did something like that, we'd be in prison right now. The handcuffs would be on us. We'd be under indictment.
Well, that's what we're talking about. It's not just the money. It's the legal part. But how are you going to change it? You're thinking it's just all going to come to a collapse. I don't know.
No, here's why it has to. Okay, it is the reason these laws exist is not simply because people get screwed, although that certainly is a reason. Okay, the reason these laws exist is because the inevitability of a collapse if you don't enforce them is there, and that is because exponents are not a suggestion.
You mean that some people put these laws together actually had a little common sense when they did it? Imagine that.
No, really, isn't that an amazing thing?
Well, you know, I'm kind of interrupted, but I'm trying to explain what you're saying is true in more ways than you even know. I happened to talk to somebody this weekend who was saying about they're going to do some remodeling, and I was looking at a couple of bridges that need to be repaired.
Right.
You look at the amount of taxes people are bitching and moaning about, which they should, by the way, because what did the person say in Illinois? The taxes in Illinois have gone up twice as fast as inflation for 30 years.
Yeah,
I will bet you that the cost of redoing a highway or a bridge has gone up maybe 50%, even more than that.
You know, I'll tell you what though, Chief. There's a hell of a difference between Illinois and, say, for example, where I live. Now, maybe not all the way through Tennessee, because I can certainly point at parts of it, like in Nashville. And
I'm not talking about the scamming. I'm talking about just the material and labor.
No. But here's the thing. The road that leads into my immediate area got screwed up pretty good by the winter. Okay, salt gets in there, then it freezes, it cracks the surface of the road, et cetera, right? Potholes all over the place. Okay.
I imagine you guys can get through some winters without any salt. Am I correct?
But not all. I mean, yeah, this... The thing is,
they're called freeze and dry, freeze and thaw cycles.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, water gets in there, expands when it freezes and cracks. If it can get in there, it cracks and therefore does damage. Okay, fine. the funny part of it is that the road coming into this area was in questionable condition this fall. Once the snow was gone, it was quite bad. You actually had to pay attention where you're going, or you'd get the teeth rattling problems that happen when you're on bad roads, right? Okay, fine. I go down to the store one day, and the road guys are out there, and I'm like, oh crap, for the next week, 2 weeks, whatever, they're out there with the grinder, shaving off the top surface, right? And then they're gonna fix it. And a flagger's out there. Great. So I go down to the store. I come back a different way to avoid it, because obviously there's a traffic backup because the guy's out there flagging. One lane. It's a two lane road. So when they do that, you're sitting in line. 5 o'clock that night, it was done.
You do realize that when they first, what we're talking about is the big machine that comes. No, we're talking about asphalt, not concrete.
Yeah.
The big machine comes by with a huge flame coming out of the bottom, and it scrapes like the top 2.5 inches or so off. Now, if you don't have sewers there, which you have to do individually, which takes forever, the idea is you could come by that afternoon and put the top back on. That was the way it was designed. Now, one of the problems here in Chicago is, when you do that, you have all kinds of manhole covers and things or stuff under the street that needs to be done individually, and that takes a while. So you never, I'm going to say in my neighborhood, this is Chicago now, they came and scraped the street next to mine. I'm going to say it was 4 months of driving over that crap before they came back and did the rest.
Okay, well, guess what? My neighborhood, my direct neighborhood, in my neighborhood, they came in a couple of years ago and redid the neighborhood. And the entire thing was done in about 4 days. And by the way, there are manhole covers in the middle of the street.
But if you have to redo all that concrete and reset them, you're not doing that in a day.
Well, I'm just saying, yeah. But it was a few days, okay? But literally down Boyd's Creek Highway, the parts that were tore up, 1 day they were done.
Well,
one day.
In fact, you've heard me rail rag, whatever you want to talk about it now, with some of these contracts can be so lucrative that the guys don't even do them. You know, and
I know.
And then I will say that, say Carl and I were connected, which I don't know if either one of us are, but if we were connected in World War II, but if Joel hops on, let me know, we would maybe be able to weasel 5% more for our PT boat engines if we were connected, but it would be 5%, and we would just, you know, and we'd spend it in the local bar, and it wouldn't go anywhere. But
it would recycle right in. Yeah.
And by the way, we'd pay taxes on it, and so would the bartender. So the this next street, this thing's sitting there forever, and I'm sure one of the cherished people got the contract, right? And all of a sudden, on a Saturday, I see, let's say, people appeared to me to be not the people who got the contract, let's put it that way, doing the sewer work, and I'm going, it reminded me of the Katrina, where the big companies in Washington got all the cleanup contracts, and by the time it got down to New Orleans, it was like the third subcontractors. There's three illegal guys with a broom and a dump truck cleaning the thing up. You know, that didn't used to... people go back and say, well, people always were able to scam. Yeah, but the degree of scamness seems to be going off the chart.
Well, but again, it's the exponents who do that, Chief. And the thing is, if you make 10%, it's the whole reason that all this crap went on in Minnesota and everywhere else, right? And by the way, not just Minnesota. It seems to be in the red states, too. Ohio is full of it. And the entire reason for it is that when you start, if 10% of it's stolen and you make your number, and therefore now, you know, God love you, stock price goes up, you announce, you know, good earnings, whatever have you. All right, now you have to do 10% on top of 10%.
Well, I agree with that.
You're going to miss next quarter.
But in terms of the market itself, because of the IRAs and the 401ks, there's an awful lot of people. I mean, obviously, I'm going to say I don't know a lot of things more than most people, but one thing I do know is about clients, because I got a lot of them, and I know the mentality. And you know, I've had a couple maybe, but the clients I don't like. I mean, but I know, I mean, there are people, not necessarily the ones that I manage the stuff for, but there are people that trade through this firm that today think they're a genius for owning Micron. When in fact, there's probably some deal where Trump's buying part of it. I mean, IBM was what up last week because they got a deal from government. Out of all the crap I've had to deal with since I started the business, wars, long term capital, you name it, this is the first time I've seen to this degree, a government picking a firm and saying you're it.
By the way, Joel's up, so I'm going to not take his time.
I don't know about if Kenny's around or not, so if you would hang, it'd be great. Joel, how are you? Joel, are you there? Unmute thyself.
He is up.
The old mute trick. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
We're doing good. How are you? How was your weekend?
Good. Weather picked up near the end. It was a little overcast and rainy the first couple days. Got some stuff done around the fort and got outside yesterday. So raring to go here on this 4-day trading week.
Well, you got new record highs. I was actually at the, which I'll talk about later when Hal's on, but I was at the National Military Cemetery on Saturday. I'll just briefly kind of lead into it. We Audrey's cousin and her husband both passed last year, unfortunately, and they're buried out to the Lincoln Cemetery here just south of Joliet. It's actually in Elwood, as in Elwood Blues, right? And
Well, you know what else is in Elwood?
Not much. A bar.
is Maywood Park still there?
No, Maywood Park's in Maywood. It was in Maywood. That's west. We're talking way south. It's south of Joliet. It's on essentially an old Route 66. But it's way down there. And, it just, when I say just opened, it opened in 1999. Guess how many people are there? The bodies are there. It's your wildest 2000. Dream. 80,000 in 25 years or 26 years. And every single one of them had a little flag on it for the weekend.
Cool.
Now, who the hell... Well, they're not all buried because they have these walls where you can put the urns, right? So I'm going to say half are buried. I'm just making a stab there, but, I mean, there's headstones all over the damn place. But every... And the guys who come out there and fire off the guns and stuff, there's like 10 funerals a day. And those guys do that all the time, these old dudes. So we went from there to the VFW in Wilmington, and because that's where these guys come out of, and had a sandwich and stuff and met a few people in there. I can't get over, there's a town, Wilmington, Illinois. The main street is like a main street in like any small town you've ever seen. That main street used to be Route 66.
Correct.
Can you imagine the traffic that was going through there 24 hours a day?
Hey, 1 second, Chief.
Yep.
Chief, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, 1 second. I can barely hear you, man. Me? Joel, are you there?
I'm here.
I can hear Joel. Fine.
All right, cool. Carry on then.
Okay, carry on. So we went to the VFW there and had a nice time. Met some guy who had 3 terms in the Navy. Then he was a contractor. He looked like one of these guys that if you pissed him off, he could like break 3 people in half kind of thing. But we just kind of did the routine. But they were going to have a 3,000 or 4,000 person memorial thing on Memorial Day there, and they got a nice day for it. And we didn't go down there again, but it was 80,000 people. Good Lord. In 26 years? It's 10,000 a year. No, I mean, it's 3,000.
A lot of veterans.
I mean, it's amazing, huh? I mean, how many veterans there are. But so what do you make of not even our stuff, but Japan at all-time highs when all everybody does is talks about how bad the place is doing because of the oil prices. Do you think governments are using these crises to inflate the currency so rich people make more money? Or am I just being a weirdo?
Oh, Chief, you know you'll never get me to disagree with you on stuff like that.
Ugh. So, I mean, I'm kind of hoping I'm wrong on some of this stuff. But when I see it happen 4 and 5 times in a row, I don't know if I'm wrong anymore.
You're not wrong, Chief. No, we've seen this trick before.
When are we gonna get wise to it? Are there enough people now that have, you know, back in 1929, only 7% of the people even had any stocks. As much as everybody says everybody had stock, that's BS. Well, now, I think enough people, certainly my clients, have 401ks, have IRAs, are involved in the market. Let's say it's probably up to, what, 30%, 35%. There's enough people going along with it that I don't think you're ever going to see it. And there's not going to be an outcry that the market goes up. I mean, how many people in Japan that own stocks, which a lot of the banks, by the way, are upset that the stock market's up even though the economy's going a rat hole because of oil prices? I don't think you're getting too big of a hue and cry, do you?
No. Only from the people that don't own stocks.
Yeah, that are sitting there going, I can't afford this. I was talking this weekend to somebody who was involved in a remodeling of a school, and they cannot believe the prices of just a general remodel. I mean, we've talked on the show, all of us, that it's everybody talks about inflation. I mean, look at the gas, look at the chicken. It's not, I'm not saying that's not a problem because you got to buy it every week, but it's the stuff you haven't even thought about yet. An emergency room visit for 3 stitches is how much? I mean, the stuff you don't even know, you never even dreamed it to think you're buying until all of a sudden you have to. We want to redo that 2 mile stretch of roadway. How many $1 million? It's like, I think we're being stretched now to points we don't even know about it. I mean, because the guys behind me in our office place here are guys that work for the city, and they manage subcontractors for like bridge work and things like that. And I've gotten to know them a little bit. And boy, they're talking about some of the prices, some of the stuff for this stuff to redo a bridge or something. It's just crazy. People wonder why their gas tax is high. Try and replace a bridge. I mean, it's insane, the inflation we don't even really know about yet. And it's pretty scary, I think.
Well, we're starting to see it in the numbers a little bit, yep. Chief, but inflation in the stock market too, right?
I mean, well, what do you make of the, and I want to turn this into a political discussion, but you and I have been dealing with a lot of stuff since we've been in the business. Remember long-term capital, remember those kinds of fiascos. Yep. We've never had a deal with the government picking winners and all of a sudden a stock being up 20% because the government took a piece of it. I mean, General Motors, yeah, but they were in Chrysler, but they were flat on their ass. It was a whole different program. But the idea that all of a sudden IBM can be up $30 because government gave them $1 billion, I've never had to deal with that. How do you sell calls on something like that?
You don't. You buy calls, yeah. Chief.
But you can't. You got to buy the right ones, though. Now, Micron today, there's going to be some kind of deal there. It's up $50.
Someone got tripled their price target on that one, Chief. So that's the catalyst behind that. But, it's all about AI. It's all about quantum now, right? Where the government has made those moves. And I guess maybe not being short of them is probably the best consolation if you can't own them.
But there's always got to be an excuse, right? First, it was click-throughs, then it was something else. I mean, there's always got to be an excuse for all this stuff, right? I mean, if we didn't have quantum, if we didn't have AI, the stuff's just going up. We're pouring money into the system, and it's going up. I mean, the person with the greatest excuse, their stock goes up the most, right?
The truth.
I've got Micron, which has been around for, we're not talking about a new company. Revenue per share is $52, which puts them now at, 15 times revenue?
Yes.
Wow. That's a number.
Yep. I mean, there's the demand, and so far there's supplies. So keep on rolling. We're looking, a lot of things coming out of Washington you have to pay attention to. So,
Let me ask you just real quick. I don't know if you got a dash, but just in terms of market fabric, Micron's up $50. Now, the people buying it here, I mean, there's one of two ways you buy it. One is, wow, these guys got something going, so I better get in. Or does something happen overnight where you just catch some people short and now they're chasing? I think
it's a combination of both. I think one thing that kind of added to it, a lot of times things get tough on the weekend. Trump likes to talk tough on the weekend. And sometimes that has, the futures opening down 50 points. So maybe some people were positioned like that. But it was the opposite. We heard unconfirmed news again that they're close to a deal. So thinner Sunday markets, all that, you get the analyst, feeling good coming up, getting some upgrades this morning, tripling the price of Micron. So it's a combination of factors. So we're starting out in the green, Chief, but I got to hop. I'm running the ship over there, so we'll be talking later in the week.
I'm on Friday, right?
You got it.
All right, buddy. Talk at you. Do we have Kenny?
We do.
How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right. I just was, grumping a little bit about how many times, I'm not going to do the whole thing about the people from Mexico when they devalued the currency, all the people in the know got their money offshore and brought it back the next day and had more dough. Are we going to use every single crisis now around the world to run enough money into the system to have the market? We are on record highs as we've hopefully have a deal in Iran, which gets us back essentially to where we started. I don't think of that. And yet we're at record highs. Japan, by everybody's stretch, is gagging on these oil prices. And yet they're at record highs. Is this all just, as Rahm Emanuel once said, never waste a good crisis? Are all these things just an opportunity to pour money in the system and rich people to make more dough?
Well, I think that you could assume that that's where it's going to happen. Although, we do have a new Fed chair that changed on Friday. Someone's got a different view of kind of what the world looks like, what the role of the Fed is going to be, and where rates should be. So I'm kind of hoping that if we get rate cuts, it's going to be because we're also getting tightening and they're taking money out of the system. There's no way they're going to be able to cut rates and leave the system sloshing around, because then it'll be exactly what you're saying. Put more money in the system for the rich guys to get richer, and that can't happen. Although, up until now, that has been kind of the way it's been working, but there's that change at the Fed now, so let's just give it a little bit of time to see what happens. But to your point, yes, to see the markets at these highs when it's still so uncertain is a little bit concerning to me. And when the VIX is in way into complacent zone while we still have an ongoing conflict with no real resolution yet, just suggests to me that once again the market is betting on the expectation and is not necessarily looking at what's real at the moment. So, well, that is a little bit of a concern for me.
Well, this is a sort of chump change compared to the COVID situation where the place was in a depression for 2 years. You still came out on record highs.
No, it came out on record highs because they pumped everyone. They kept talking about, you know, they kept talking about the recovering economy because the economy, don't forget, the economy took that bad hit. The markets had originally backed off, and then they flooded the place with money, and it had nowhere else to go, right? Especially because people were stuck at home, and they started trading. They started pumping money into the markets. They started getting involved, and there you go. And then you did have that recovery in the economy once COVID kind of lifted and people started going out again and shopping for experiences and spending money and all that stuff that, you know, did lead to that recovery. But now I think it's gotten, I'm still in the camp that I think it's gotten ahead of itself. I'm still invested. I love the long-term story, but I think that you have to be a little bit cautious right here in the short term because I think there's ongoing volatility.
Well, what you talk about the new Fed chair, look, you know, the guy has 10 or 15 variables coming at him.
Yep.
Kenny, it doesn't matter if you're Lucifer or Solomon, the same 10, 15 variables are coming at you. When you're painted in the corner, doesn't matter who the guy is in the corner, does it?
No, it doesn't, but that's what I'm saying. Is that, so I think the story remains, no Fed cuts this year, no rate cuts this year at all. I think there's still a bias to the upside, meaning rate hikes, not rate cuts, and not even holding steady. I think there is still a bias to the upside. We're going to learn more about that this week when we get PCE, which comes out on Thursday, which is the Fed's favorite inflation gauge in terms of where they think rates are going. As well as kind of what happens on that geopolitical front. Are we going to get a deal? We're not going to get a deal. Is oil going to start to flow again? Is it not going to flow again? Is oil going to itself going to, you know, go up through $100 again or not? Those are all going to be signs, that telltale signs that are going to help the next move by the Fed. But to your point, if they're backed in a corner, they're backed in the corner no matter who it is.
Well, what I really don't see what they're talking about, a new direction. What's the new direction?
the new direction is cutting the shrinking the balance sheet. That's the new direction. Until now, we've been pumping and pumping and pumping. It's adding. The new direction is going to be if you see a complete turnaround in that story, and then they start taking money out of the system.
Okay. Well, when we had a guy named Powell, who did that after COVID.
Yep.
And he started pulling some money out of the system
in December.
And I'm talking about several years ago when Trump's first term.
December of that but it was December of that year.
But and Trump dragged him into the White House and either paddled him or waterboarded him or threatened his family or something. He came out and started expanding the balance sheet again. What makes you think this guy is going to come in and do what we want him to do? It's exactly the opposite of what Trump wants him to do.
Yeah, I hear you. It is the opposite of what Trump said to do. But at this point, you got to make a decision. And that's why I even said in my note this morning, it's going to be very interesting because the only way Trump came out again yesterday or Friday, whatever it was, before the weekend, over the weekend, talking about Kevin Warsh and how now he expects rates to come down and come down fast. The only way, and you and I have had this conversation, the only way you could even maybe slightly consider that is if Kevin Warsh shrinks the balance sheet substantially, because one will offset the other. He is not going to cut rates.
All right, how do you... What? Just as quick discussion here. What the Fed does is manage the amount of money in the pool.
Correct.
If they shrink the balance sheet, which means they
take money out of the pool.
They go the opposite direction. They're selling stuff. Right.
They're selling stuff. Well, no, when they shrink the balance sheet, they're taking money out of the system. When they expand the balance sheet, they're selling stuff, adding money to the system.
All right, what I'm saying is it's kind of counterintuitive, because the way the Fed kept long-term rates down during COVID, even with the inflation going to the moon, is they made up money, and they went out and bought stuff in the market. They put money into the system.
They put money into the system.
Okay, so when you do that, you essentially lower the interest rates.
Right.
So how are they going to do the opposite there and not raise rates? I mean, how can he lower rates and shrink the balance sheet?
Because what I think he's going to do is, I think he's, because the balance, because what you explained is how the market would react, right? Rates would react based on...
No, I'm talking about exactly what the mechanism is. I mean...
Right. So the mechanism is, so if he shrinks the balance sheet, he can force rates lower by cutting rates. They won't get... They wouldn't naturally go lower on their own. He would have to force them by cutting rates in order to... If he's going to shrink the balance sheet. Right? Because if he shrinks the balance sheet, the answer is that rates should go up.
Well...
Right?
Well, what he has to do... Just the mechanism... Let's say he's got a 10-year bond on the balance sheet, or a mortgage, which he probably does. The mortgage comes due, the money goes to the Fed out of the system, okay?
Yep.
And he just doesn't do anything with it. It just goes out of the system. So he shrunk the money supply a little bit, and he actually is wanting, by doing that, you should actually have rates going up a little bit. So
right. Right. Rates should go up.
Right.
Rates should go up, but he's already come out and said... Right, that in order for him to cut rates, he needs to shrink the balance sheet, which means he'd have to force the rate cut. Right, he'd have to go. It would go counter to what the natural reaction should be, is that if he's right, because rates should, to your point, rates should go up if he's taking money out of the system.
Well, you're letting it just run off. So the money's coming out, and he has to be buying stuff every day just to be even, because stuff matures.
Just to be even.
Yeah.
But he wants to buy. Well, I think, at least if you believe what he said, is that he wants to buy more and then cut rates. And if he does that, maybe Trump is satisfied, or maybe he isn't. But to your point, if he shrinks the balance sheet and takes money out of the system, Trump may still not be happy.
Well,
Trump wants it both ways.
I mean,
right?
He's going to have to. You can't drop in order to lower rates. You balloon the balance sheet up, right? So if you let it come flying back down, that's a pretty hard way to lower rates. I don't know what he's going to do, but I mean, how do you do it?
Yeah, well, I we're going to find out how he's going to do it, if he even does it, because I agree. It's not going to be easy. And by the way, you have a committee that's not so sure that rates aren't going higher first, right? Because you've had that dissent in the committee amongst the members of the committee in the last meeting. He's got to come in and try to convince everybody that they're wrong and he's right, which I think is going to be difficult for him to do, because I don't think there are a bunch of idiots on the committee. I think they're all well-educated, and... You know, they're not necessarily going to, I don't think they're necessarily going to just roll over and say, oh, new Fed chair, we've got to make it all right for him and do what he says. I'm not sure that that's how the committee's going to react.
Well, I also think that at some point people are going to stop believing these bullshit inflation numbers.
Yes, I agree. At some point they're going to stop believing them. And we'll get a taste of that on Thursday when we get the PCE report. Look, it's expected to be higher over last month. The question is it going to be even higher than what the already hot expectation is? And then if that's the case, if we get more data on the Iran-U.S. apparent deal, will investors, even if it's hotter, will investors look through it and say, okay, yes, it's up, but we have this deal, so oil's coming down, so we're going to ignore this report and focus on what happens 1 and 2 and 3 months from now?
You can do all you want that.
I agree.
But what is the... I think this PCE is the most amazing thing in all of government I've ever come across. It's a number that nobody knows where it came from. Whose ass does it come out of? I mean, at least with the CPI, you and I can look at it and go, wait a minute, they got used cars down 3.5% last year, and every time I look for one, right, it's up.
It's up.
You know, I mean, you can at least get some idea of what they're talking about. This thing, does the Fed even know where the number comes from?
I'm not sure. I don't know, because I'm not an economist and I don't produce the number. All I know is that, as everyone talks about, this is the one that the Fed looks at, even more than PPI and CPI. This is the one that they focus their attention on. So it'll be interesting to see what this one
says. Well, we have
says.
They used to call, we did a lot about the veterans this weekend, and the term, I don't know what's the word now is, but the term that World War II people used to use when you gave... When you used the term brainwash, because what the Nazis were good at that. I mean, we're sort of brainwashed into this that we're supposed to believe these numbers. And Kenny, you know, without going through the whole list, all you have to do is look at the owner's equivalent rent line and look at the medical expenses line, and the whole thing is a sham. I mean, every piece in there is a sham, pretty much, for 40 years.
Yeah, I hear you.
I mean, again. So what? How long are we going to get? Or just because people say it enough on TV, it makes it the truth.
Well, I, again, I don't know, right? I agree. I'm not sure it makes it the truth. But if everyone's focusing on it, then it becomes a reality, right? If everyone's going, oh, my God, here it comes, and the Fed regards this as so important, then it becomes important because everyone talks about it. Now, to your point, when does it blow up on everybody? When does everyone realize the whole thing was a farce? I don't know. But right now, if that's the Fed's focus and that's what everyone's going to focus on in terms of trying to determine what the Fed does next, then that's what it is. So you have to play along, right? You can argue all you want is, does it make sense? I don't know. But if that's what they're using as their guide, then that's what they're using as their guide.
Well, I think some of it has to do when you see things that happen, and, you know, this is just, I'm asking you because you're closer to the power point than I am. I think that as much as we may think our government doesn't work, I have a feeling that everybody, not everybody, but especially the representatives that are running this year, I think a lot of people, a lot of the population are not the least bit shy about giving their opinions.
And, no, they're not.
And I think there's been this steady drumbeat that, you know, we're tired of listening to the presidential bullshit for the last four guys.
Yeah.
And you see the amazing blow up all of a sudden about this, you know, $1.7 billion to pay off people that, you know, whatever, half of them are criminals.
Yeah.
First of all, I think that's one of the most absurd things they've ever heard. But out of all the things they do, $1.7 billion, I think, and this is one man's opinion, I'm asking, this doesn't sound like a question, but it is, I think that was more the straw that broke the camel's back than an individual item. I think,
right.
I think there's been this ongoing stuff that's been going on. Well, this guy's taken it to a new extreme, but it's really been going on for the last five presidents, where people are like secretly pissed off about this, about that, but not enough to really. Now you got this inflation, you got the COVID inflation, but nobody really ever dealt with, and now you're looking at houses, and all of a sudden they're twice as expensive they were, you know, 5 years ago or 10 years ago. I mean, Audrey was doing some research and. Which she says windows are up three times in the last 5 years. I mean, it's unbelievable, or something along those lines. And so, I mean, all of a sudden people got this thing, and all of a sudden one thing happens. You know, Trump was way out on his skis with this stupid $1.7 billion deal, his deal where he sues himself, and all of a sudden, everybody flares. I don't think it's just that item. I honestly don't. I think it's people are getting there, and all of a sudden, you know, it's like, you know, when you were a kid, you're home late five nights in a row, and then the sixth night, the whole hell breaks loose. It's not just because of the sixth night. It was because of the five before, I think, right? Just me. I mean, my read of people. But somehow or another, people are sitting there going, wait a minute, where is all this going? I think. And I don't know what that means, but...
Well, I think that's true, but I think that ultimately people are gonna, you know, assess the... what the daily situation is today, and they're going to react to today in terms of investing, right? In terms of how they feel about the markets or how they feel about, you know, the geopolitical situation is going to determine how they allocate their money. And now guys like you and I who manage money on behalf of them, how we then allocate that money.
Well, right? but you and I we're different in a lot of ways. We're old and grumpy, I don't know, but we're different in a lot. Yeah. But the real thing that's pushing the market, I think, and what Al talks about, it's not you and I putting money to work every day, which we both probably do, right? But it's not, we didn't cause the $80 billion in margin debt surge last month. You and I aren't doing
that, I don't think. We did not.
Somebody's doing that. That's why Micron's up 50 bucks today. It's not because you and I took some of our clients' money, hopefully we're up a little bit of dough, we're going to buy a couple hundred shares of this, that, and the other thing because we're up some money. That's not you and me. I don't think. You and I aren't driving Micron up 50 bucks because we decided to buy a couple hundred shares for a guy we made money for and now he's got some extra cash.
No, of course.
No, we're not doing it. So, I mean, something is driving this thing, and Hal's convinced that it's not only the Fed. I don't know if you've got too much stuff going on, but he started out with this about a year ago, talking about it's not just the money supply going up. It's the way the Fed is doing it. Only certain people are able to access it. It's not like people thought it was when I was in school, where if you increase the money supply, it filtered its way, give it 6 months, and it filters its way sort of everywhere. There always were some winners and losers, but to a certain extent, it went sort of everywhere. And Hal's gone, that's not. If you combine the increases with the bank regulations, the Dodd-Frank Amendment and those kinds of things, when Barney Frank just died, by the way. When you combine all this stuff together, it only goes in a few areas. And one of them is the stock market, because of the ease of capital, the ease of borrowing. So the same person can borrow $100,000 to buy 1,000 shares of IBM today. We'll do it. We don't have any clients like this, but if somebody wanted to,
right?
We personally, but RBC or IB would lend them $100,000 in what, 5 minutes notice?
Yep.
You and I try and get $100,000 to remodel a home or to get another truck. It's going to take us 6 months, and what are we going to sign away our kids, right?
Right.
So it's not at all. But now Jeff Bezos or somebody can go buy a firm, and all of a sudden they can get how many billion dollars from somebody for it. And Hal says that's really, and I never even thought of this, even though it's been one of my studies my whole life. It's the way it's being done now that it's so narrow, the access to the money. So yeah. Some stuff is going up and some stuff isn't. And I never. What do you think of that? I mean, I don't know if I've ever sprung this on you before.
No, I think that I think you're exactly right. I think the ease at which the banks and the financial institutions will lend money on margin, especially now when the market's going up, right? They keep lending, they keep teasing people like, oh, you can do more, you can do more. Borrow against your money, buy more stock. I think that's very true, but I think that's always been the problem. Because ultimately, there's going to come a day, and you and I both know, where the market's going to turn, and suddenly all this margin's going to get squeezed, and there'll be this fallout in the market, right? Not necessarily, it'll be exaggerated much more than it should have been, but it'll be because all these people are out there on margin.
Well, do you think that if, I'm not going to predict it, if the next 4 months,
yeah,
the market keeps doing this, and say margin debt goes up $100 billion a month, I'm not predicting that, but if it did,
if
you and I were sitting in the Fed chair spot, would we say, wait a minute, maybe it's time to nudge this initial margin up to 60 and not 50? I don't see this guy ever doing that.
No, I don't think so.
What about the margins on, like, the futures? They're even worse.
Say it again?
What about the margins on the futures? They're even worse.
Smaller. They? I don't know what margin is on futures.
Oh, God, you can buy, it's I should know because we have people who trade this. I think you can buy a S&P future at a lot less margin than you can. It's not 50%. It's not like buying a spider.
Yeah.
I bet it's 10%.
Yeah. Yeah, that's dangerous. That's way too low, in my opinion. But again, I don't trade futures, so I don't know what that market is in terms of the margin requirements. But if it's that low, that's also dangerous. So at some point, you know,
I'd be surprised if it was 10%.
Yeah,
and I'll find out next time you're on. I'll get my little cheat sheet.
Yeah. Well, you should find out. We should talk about it because that is also creating the euphoria and kind of the activity. So that needs to be. That should be. They should look at that again, and they should reassess what that margin rate should be on the futures, so it doesn't, because it only adds to the volatility.
Yeah.
It only adds to the moves, right? It exaggerates the moves.
Well, plus on the futures side, there's no slide. There's no 50 to 30.
Right.
If you lose 10 grand that day, we're calling you.
Yeah.
We need the 10 grand, or you're selling, bud. You know, it's pretty scary. So where are you off to? Where are you?
I'm in New York City right now. I was in Vegas over the weekend, a guy's weekend in Vegas, and I flew from there to New York City, and I'm here until Thursday. I got to do record the Yahoo podcast today and tomorrow, and then I got Mornings with Maria tomorrow on Fox Business at 6 to 9, and I've got the Big Money Show on Thursday from 1 to 2, and then I'm going home.
Well, Vegas to New York, that's a good kick. I hope you were in first class.
I didn't do well in Vegas. I did not do well in Vegas.
Well, you know, when you're
not a surprise.
Are you at the $1,000 table?
No, I am not. No, I am not.
Where'd you stay? Just out of curiosity.
We stayed at the Cosmopolitan.
I've never stayed there. I haven't been out there, and those places have been built. All the places I used to go out there are all down. You like?
Yeah, I go once a year, and it's this weekend, and we go with five guys, and they golf and they gamble and we eat,
God,
right?
Good
and
for
we
you.
Enjoy and we just enjoy the time and. You know, there are different of the five of us. There's different levels of betting, right? Some guys are at the high rollers table, and some guys are not. But either way, it is what it is, and the house always wins in the end.
Well, the where the Cosmopolitan's where?
Right on the Strip.
I know, but
it's across from what's it called? Planet Hollywood, or by the Sphere. the Paris, the whatever, the that okay, Paris
right,
hotel.
So, right,
the Eiffel Tower is right across the street from the Cosmopolitan.
So it's near Caesars.
Yeah, it's not that far away.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, the places I used to stay are all down for me. Well, the Flingo's still up. Caesars is still up.
Caesars is still up, yes. But the Tropicana is down because they're building that stadium there now. Was it was that the name of it, the Tropicana?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We stayed there. Well, I got to probably stay there 10 times. It's a nice place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, listen, I got to jump.
All right, but take care of yourself. SP Futures up 45. NASDAQ Futures up 300. We have Professor Hal.
Hey, what's up, Tom?
Oh, a lot of stuff. I did some
yeah, it's been busy, right?
Yeah, well, I did some veteran stuff this weekend.
Yeah, I heard about that. That sounds like a great time.
And we talked. Some of my Notre Dame guys were with a thread going this weekend about their parents all were in World War II, and I was out at the I still can't get over this National Cemetery way south of Chicago in Elwood. That's the name from the Blues Brothers.
Were the Blues Brothers from Elwood, or was that just?
I'm not so sure. That's obviously where Elwood Blues got the name. I don't know. Yeah. Dan Aykroyd from Elwood, maybe he is, but I doubt. Yeah.
Well, he was an orphan, so maybe he just thought that was a cool name.
Well, Elwood's got the town's got the breakfast spot, the gas station, the saloon, and what else? It's like.
Oh wow!
I mean, it's a little tiny town. The town that's we.
Well,
went,
if you're ever in southeastern Idaho, you can go on the Napoleon Dynamite tour.
God. Well, I was just...
It's a fictional town, but a lot of the businesses, they're in like five different towns. And you go to this gas station, and they have this piece of paper you can get for free. And it's the paper, the piece of paper itself, is the Napoleon Dynamite tour. You just follow the map. It's just a piece of paper somebody printed out and distributes at a gas station.
Well, one of the gas
stations... It's not an official tour.
One of the gas stations there has a replica of the Blues Brothers car up on a pole at the gas station.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's more official than the one in southeastern Idaho.
Well, there's a history to this whole area because that road used to be Route 66.
Oh, that goes all the way to Arizona, right?
It goes to California? Santa Monica Pier.
Yeah, it goes through New Mexico.
Started at Jackson and the lake here and went to the Santa Monica Pier, the mother road.
Yeah, I think it goes through New Mexico because I was on Route 66 back when I was.
Well, most of it's interstate, but there's still areas where you can get off. But
there's a town that is the model of the Cars cartoon. And it's parallel to the interstate, but it's called Route 66, and it's through this town in New Mexico.
Yeah, well, it
looks like it did.
It is.
It's 30, 40 years ago.
It's essentially the access road for the interstate in most of those areas. Yeah, in some areas, it's. Yeah. There's a couple areas where it's like 25 miles and veers off like into the desert that you can still take. But every one of the exits are these little towns. That's where the wooden Indians and stuff. You have to get off and get on them. But you look at the, like
out west when you put in the interstate, the interstate bypasses the town that the original U.S. highway went through, and that's like with Salt Lake City. U.S. 89 is State Street, the main street through Salt Lake City, and the interstate just bypasses it.
But it really was referred to as the ribbon of road. It exactly was. But the bridges are all two-lane, going over the washes. But the road is, there's no shoulder, really. The whole desert's the shoulder. The road is as wide as this office, two lanes. Yeah. And if you want to watch, who the hell was in it? Henry Fonda was in The Grapes of Wrath, John Steinbeck. And they would have these old clunkers, and they'd drive out to California during essentially the Dust Bowl.
Yeah.
And when you stop driving, you just pull off 100 yards and set up camp. I mean, you're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, there were really no rest stops. You just pull off the side of the road, exactly.
Well, my mom, not my dad, after my dad was diagnosed with cancer, he always wanted to go out west. So I was around, my brother wasn't, so they plunked me with my grandmother, and they drove out west in the 51 Dodge, right? And my mom hated it. She wanted to do whatever my dad wanted to do. So they took the southern route out, which was 66, and came up California on the coast, and they came back the northern route, which has been Route 6, right? So the northern route was fine. It was the southern route. The food was awful. It was so hot. You basically had to drive at night because, those tires in those days, they would blow out in the sun.
Oh, yeah, they'd melt.
Yeah,
the
she said, yeah.
Yeah, that was rubber back then.
Yeah, she goes, you had to drive sort of at night. She goes, I was never so happy to get to California. See, we had a great time in San Francisco. But and coming back wasn't so bad, but driving out there, God, it was just like the movie.
Yeah, you definitely want to drive at night because, yeah, those tires are just melt. In that part of the country, well, it's just crazy.
And you know how ladies are about. I mean, one of the big reasons why McDonald's is so popular is because both sexes, but more important, the ladies could find a clean bathroom.
Oh yeah, you know, out west, yeah. It's really interesting. The gas stations, like at the Maverick. The Maverick is kind of like a Wawa or a Sheetz. Maverick, they have fresh bread. They cook fresh bread every day, and then the bathrooms, you could die in them. They're so clean.
Yeah,
and
I mean, it was
tiled nicely.
Yeah, that wasn't the way.
Yeah.
My mom was not happy.
Yeah, you don't want to stop on a gas station in New Jersey off a highway. They haven't cleaned the bathroom in 20 years. Yeah. It's crazy.
And, you know, none of the cars are air conditioning.
I don't know how they get a cleanliness score of AA or A.
Who knows?
The bathrooms, you don't want to step in them. You don't want to step in them.
Anyway, we were out in where I was going with this is Wilmington is this little town. It has this big history to it. But the main street there, Tulane, used to be Route 66. I can't even, and there's like five, you know, no-tell motels along the way. Go figure, right? And we went to the VFW hall there because the guys that do this cemetery is 80,000 people there now. And it didn't open until almost 2000.
Hmm.
So what is it, 3,500 people a year?
Yeah, wow.
And every one of the graves had a little flag on it. How many people did that take? I mean, there's not 80,000 graves because there's these walls where you put the urns for people want to be cremated.
Well, if there are that many graves and urns and people buried there, it'd have to be a worker doing that, right?
Well, yeah, but
it wouldn't be like
who the hell could put 40,000? No, but there were people out there visiting. We went and visited. Everybody
put all those flags on every
single
one.
Oh, every single one? They must have had local people.
Maybe volunteers.
But the guys who came, you know, we went to the funeral, obviously, and they had the funeral has they're big deals. There's the guy that you know leads you to the place, and he was really nice. And then there's two active duty people, you know, they're still, you know, and they're maybe in reserves or something, but they're, you know, still in the Army or wherever the hell they are. They actually conduct the ceremony and fold the flag for you and hand it to you and. You know, on behalf of a grateful nation and all that stuff. Then there's, you know, these few old guys that come and shoot the guns. You know, and the weather, it's out in the middle of nowhere. It's blustery. It's horrible out there most of the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, the two funerals out there, they both were like 40 degrees and windy, right? You know, and and these guys, they work out of the VFW hall in Wilmington. So that's why Audrey and I go, Audrey, we got to get down there. We have a, you know, have a sandwich and leave a big tip at least because they wouldn't take any money. So we go down there, and I don't know how well they're doing because the kitchen's only open 2 days a week. But the lady goes, she goes, well, the kitchen's not open. And I go, all right, well, but we have really good beef sandwiches. We got good hot dogs, and we got great chili. And I go, well, that's good enough. Give me a beef sandwich. And Audrey had, Audrey had chili and a hot dog. And she goes, this chili is spectacular. She goes, I know. My daughter made it. She came in the morning and made the chili. But, I mean, it was a nice little spot. Everybody's friendly as hell. Some guy's sitting there, and, of course, he becomes my best buddy, a nice guy named Patrick. He's a vet, disabled. And he says, yeah, those guys work out of here. But I'm doing the math. That's 10 funerals a day. These guys are out shooting guns at, for God's sake. All volunteering.
Huh.
I mean, it's, you know, obviously the cause is dramatic. And I don't care what you do on any other holiday. You can have a Labor Day sale. I think people should treat Memorial Day a little more. I mean, we're talking about people who didn't come back, you know, and you go along the where Audrey's group is in their urns or in their whatever, what do you want to call it, the drawer or in the wall. But you look at all the different names, and every one of them is theirs is like one of the newest. There's a few more, but everybody in there either died late 2025 or early 2026. And you just go by the names, and it's funny, you'll see a Vietnam guy, you'll see a Korean guy, then you'll see like a World War II guy that was born in, you know, 1923, died 2025, and you're going, wow, good for you. But
yeah.
I mean, they're guys of all different
those
ages.
Those guys went through some real trauma, too, I'll tell you that. Holy smokes.
I mean, but, you know, everybody, you know, when you think about it, everybody, I was just going through, I mean, our family, I mean, how our lives have changed and all the people that were connected with it. And, I mean, my uncle was killed taking a bridge in Germany. Never met him, so who knows how he might have changed the life of everybody. My dad, I think, caught a melanoma in the South Pacific. Caught a melanoma. He's a light-skinned Irish guy in the South Pacific. They somehow butchered taking it off, I think. And then he had brain cancer, kind of where the melanoma was, and died when he was 36.
Wow.
You know, my uncles, you know, one of my uncles went to Hawaii after Pearl Harbor. He must have been with a construction group, I think, Al, because he was, I don't think he was ever in the Army, but he went over there and he was on ship repair, whether he was a welder or what he was, for a couple of years. Now, he never got to go on the GI Bill. Now, the people who, I noticed that my uncle is buried here, the one who got killed in Germany. And I never thought anything of it. I go visit the grave and, you know, died it was February of 1945 and whatever it was. And all of a sudden, Lou was on the show on well, we found out that he actually was buried in 1948. And I'm thinking, how did that work?
And, yeah, maybe they found him, maybe they found his dog tags somewhere in Europe.
What Lou says, what happens is, if you know, if there was an area where he goes, probably, you know, 30, 50 people got killed taking that bridge.
Yeah.
Because if you go, he gave me the historical spot, you know, right the day where they were. They were taking a bridge from France into Germany. So he goes, they would bury you in a common grave and take one of the dog tags. And after the war, they're mostly women. They would go afterward, they'd open these graves up. Now, nobody's embalmed. Nobody, can you imagine? I can't even imagine. Yeah. And they would match up the dog tag to the body with the dog tag still on it. And now, none of those ladies were eligible for the GI Bill.
No.
What kind of a job was that, for God's sake? And then they would call the family up, or I don't know if you call them, they'd probably send them a letter saying, we'll either bury, you know, your beloved one in one of the graves here, and there's graves all over Europe, right? U.S., or we will ship the body back to you, you know, to God knows where. I mean, it wasn't O'Hare at the time. It had to be railroad station, you would think, right? And from then, it's on you. You know, we'll buy the headstone, but you got to pay for the burial. We'll get the body home to you. And in my family, they didn't have a pot to piss in, but they somehow elected to pony up the money for that. So he's buried in the family plot. But it was 4 years after he died. And so all these people, there's all kinds of stuff that people did. I mean, none of the ladies that were in the Wax or the Waves or anything ever got GI Bill, did they? I mean, the black people allegedly got the GI Bill, but guess what? Nobody would give them a mortgage, and they couldn't get into school. So, So unless you happen to be a black guy from Chicago or from New York, where they actually would let you into the school, didn't do you any good if you're from Mississippi, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could have gone to maybe, you know, Grambling or something.
You could have went to strictly black college or university, HBCU.
And by and large, what percentage of black people took advantage of the GI Bill? I'm sure it was pretty low. And now, none of my uncles, I had a couple other uncles that were here. One was a tool and die maker, so he was, you know, four something something. He couldn't go. And so was his brother. So there was this big tug of war between the Army wanted, 5 million people. They never got close to that because they were fighting with the construction people. Hey, if you want me to make you tanks, you got to leave me some people. You can't take them all. So there was this constant fight over a three-year period between people to work in the munitions factories versus people to join the Army. So the Army was never, they're always like a million short of what they wanted to get. But by the way, they had some planes and tanks to use, so it was a trade-off. But now none of those guys ever, they just were tool and die makers till they died, where my stepfather was drafted very late, was a navigator, but then they dropped the bomb in Japan, and he never went anywhere. They just let him out. But now he was eligible for the GI Bill and ended up having a real nice career. And my uncles were always kind of so there's never, when you go back, it never really worked. Well, it worked for some, didn't work for some. It obviously didn't work at all if you died or were wounded. I mean, it was, and everybody says all those guys didn't talk about it. They didn't talk about it, but can you imagine? I mean, I don't, to say that they didn't have the mental problems that people from NAM and stuff had, I think they did.
They did.
They had a lot of...
It was just a different generation.
Well, it was also, you had more VFWs.
You got to remember, when you said, we didn't have enough money to buy... We didn't have a pot to piss in. That means you were so poor that you couldn't afford literally a pot to pee in.
Yeah.
That's where that phrase comes from. And we're just a few generations away, you know, 4 or 5 generations away from people peeing in pots, right?
Well, we were,
that's
we were
the generation
to,
that peed in pots.
But
so
but we were up to
kind of world.
Yeah, but we were up to 6-7 people living in a, you know, a 900 square foot house. So it was better than a tent, but you know, you had to get along. Let's put it this way. That's why
in that world, you know, those kinds of problems were, you know, basically the kind of problems we have today versus the kinds of problems they had, you know, 100 years ago. They're just night and day. I mean, we worry about things that they can't even imagine worrying about because they were literally worried about peeing in a pot and trying to find enough food to eat. I mean, they were literally, people were literally at subsistence wages back then. So the kinds of problems we complain about are the kind of problems that rich people of the day complain about. So they're just two different worlds. You can't compare those two different
worlds.
Every time
it got cold, somebody would go downstairs and heat up the coal-fired furnace rather than worried about where you plug your cell phone in. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah.
What the? We started earlier. It's kind of
stoked that. Yeah, to stoke that furnace.
Yeah. Well, we started a little earlier talking about. By the way, your name has been bandied about dramatically since last week.
Hopefully, they're not nominating me to be a member of the Fed because I have no desire to do that.
Oh, you do it. You do it. What? You know they don't make that much. What's 180 a year?
Yeah. Well, that would help financially, but I have no desire to be on a committee.
Yeah, but
I don't want to be on a committee that goes over a cliff.
Every time you went somewhere, well, actually, I don't know what you can get when you're there, but the minute you're not there anymore, every time you go give one of your speeches, you're getting 150G.
That is true, yeah. Maybe it is, yeah.
Instead of renting the little electric car, you'd be pulling up in a limo in the back seat, some guy driving
you. Yeah, instead of riding the train to Atlanta and then jumping in a Turo rental car.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's...
I can afford to... get a wheels up private flight to Auburn, Alabama.
You're not going to be one of these guys that has like 3 really nice cars and has a driver, but you drive a crummy car because you don't want the driver driving one of your nice cars. You know, there's people like that. What can I tell you? Well, I was kind of ragging with Carl earlier about how many times do I have to see this in that every time some crisis comes up, you know. Say the Iran war is surely a crisis, certainly if you're one being killed. We've seen COVID, we've seen other things come along. We've seen
the state is always inventing.
Well,
you know,
the idea
that, things,
and I don't even have to to bitch
take
about
more and
people,
more of our liberty.
But Japan, I can't help but notice today that they've used this crisis, which really is there because they're buying oil with money they don't have, and oh, by the way, they're dropping their currency, so they're using dollars to buy their currency back. They're in a world of hurt. Guess what? Their market's at a record high today.
Yeah.
So every time something like this happens, it seems like these governments together now pour enough money in the system to further distance one section of the population from another. Or am I just being very cynical the day after Memorial Day?
Well, I think the movies reveal a lot. You know, we always think the movies are works of fiction, but I was watching this series called Citadel. It's on Amazon Prime. And it's essentially these covert spy agencies that are run by the private sector. One's called Manticore, and it's run by the 8 most powerful families of Europe and maybe America. Just 8 really wealthy Rothschild style families, you know, one in Europe,
the Cabot,
a couple in Europe, maybe one in Russia.
What was it? The Cabot.
They're running Manticore.
The Cabots talk only to the Lodges, and the Lodges only talk to God, and something like that.
Yeah, and then there's another one called Citadel, and Citadel is opposed to Manticore and these oligarchs. And I think in reality, I think that is really who is that group of families, you know, 400, 500 year old families that just have been able to maintain their wealth that try to hide from the public eye so you don't really know that they still exist. I think that's who's really kind of like pulling the strings.
I wonder, there was a I watched this YouTube thing, and I don't, not, you know, Mr. YouTube or anything, but it had to do with the 5 and 6, you know, really families from, you know, you had the Rothschilds, you had the you know, they were kind of rattling them off. Was
I think the DuPonts are like
DuPonts were definitely in there. I should remember the name. Probably 4 or 5 names. I didn't even know, but DuPonts were in there, but they've lost their panache. I mean, they're nowhere near as powerful now, at least on a daily basis, as the Musk, Bezos, those kinds of people. I mean, in terms of actual wealth.
You're always going to have new money, especially with the when America was the place where freedom was discovered. You're always going to have new money. In the movie the Titanic, you have the old money, and then they look down upon the people with the new money, right? So you're going to always have the mix of the new money and the old money. But I think the old money is a lot.
They're there, but you end up with this thing went into pretty reasonable detail, and only a couple of them still have dough. The DuPonts are one of them because they've invested very well, and they haven't...
Well, everything's locked away in a trust, too.
Yeah, but some trusts, they basically gave a lot of it away to the kids, and the kids, you know, spent it on cars and things. They've degraded. Some have kept it together under the right management, and still the generations going forward are still enough for them, too. They're not all even in that regard. Yeah. But the phenomenon... A little bit of a political one. And
well, I think there's this fight. They have to fight to maintain their power, right? And so I think they will
the state. But there's kind of two fights. There's one to maintain your power externally. The other one is nothing is more vicious than a will with like 40 people on it.
Well, I think that's the purpose of passing the property down through the oldest male, you know, that European... system of...
Yeah, but none of these families did that, I don't think.
Yeah.
But you know what? I have it somewhere buried in my...
But that's what the purpose of it was. It was actually a Nordic thing, I think. It came down with the Nordic invasion of Europe, where the property passed to the oldest male. And they were barred by law from selling the property.
Let's go to break, because that happened in not my family, but my extended family, and my views of that were so weird. Now I think they kind of are changing. But let's go break real quick. SP Futures up 53, NASDAQ Futures up 336. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jacks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Loading up Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 53. NASDAQ Futures up 336. Now, if I was a cynical old dude, which I'm not, I don't ever want this war to end. I want every weekend there be a hope that it might end, so we get a record high every start of every week. Because every time we hope it's going to be over, we go to a new record. So it's much better than actually solving it, I think. God, how stupid is that? But it seems like that's...
Well, I think that's the result of all that money being poured into the system, yeah. Right?
DAX down 110. Now, these guys were open yesterday, so they're down 110 today, 0.4%. FTSE up 57.5. Kekkonen down 56.7. Asia, we got the Nikkei down 162. They were at a record, but they were over 65,000. We've got the Hang Seng down 6. Call that flat. Shanghai down 7. Call that flat. So not much really going on there, but a lot going on here. On Friday, the S&P was up 27. NASDAQ up 50 in the hopes that we would have a solution this weekend. It's always some hopes. Bonds down 8 basis points, so 10-year under 4.5, 4.49. The Bund up 3 basis points, 2.97, almost making it to 3. Japan, 2.72. Oil, big whack here, 92.59, down 4 bucks. Brent, however, is up 2.78 to 98.92. RBOB is down to 3.31, so gas prices should be getting under 4.50 pretty much everywhere. I paid 4.80, I think. Gold down 12 bucks, 45.11. Silver up 8 cents, 76.28. Foreign exchange and the dollar has been pretty strong, but not today. It's down a little bit because the euro is up to 116. At 116.3, it was 116 even. British pound, 134.7. It was almost, I think it was below 134 the other day. We got crypto down 408.76. It's been right around the 77 number for quite a while. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:33 here in Chicago. We're looking at 65 degrees right now with a high of 79. Pleasantly warm all day with intervals of clouds and sun. Tonight will be partly cloudy and warm with a low of 65 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 75 right now with a high of 97. Plenty of sunshine tonight. Will be clear with a low of 71 degrees. Traffic in Chicago super quick. Inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 25 minutes. We're looking at 39 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook. Eisenhower from Wolf is 37 minutes. Then Ryan from 95th is 28 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 is 46 minutes. Let's talk sports. For the MLB, Cubs lost to Pirates yesterday 2-1. But the White Sox beat Twins 3-1. Diamondbacks also beat the Giants 6-2 yesterday. And today we got back-to-back games. Cubs at Pirates, 5:40 p.m. Twins at White Sox, 6:40 p.m. And Diamondbacks at Giants, 8:45 p.m. For the NHL, yesterday Hurricanes beat Canadians 3-2 and take the lead of the series. And today we also have Avalanche at Golden Knights at 8 p.m. for Game 4. Vegas leading the series 3-0. For the NBA, finally, Knicks completed a 4-0 sweep in the Eastern Conference Finals and move on to the NBA Finals for the first time since 1999. We also have Spurs at Thunder today at 7:30 p.m. with the series tied 2-2. Back over to you, Chief.
The sports has been interesting. Boy, the Knicks are playing pretty well. The couple games I was able to watch because they've been not about.
Well, is it the Knicks are playing well, or is it the Cavs just, you know,
I think
pack
the,
it up
I think the Knicks are, they really involve everybody. I mean, they guy, Brunson or whatever his name is.
Brunson's really good.
He's really something. And, and like a game last night, the guy didn't even score. He just gave everybody else the ball.
Yeah.
Found him.
Well, I think the Cavs packed it in. And I think the two best teams are in the West. I think OKC and San Antonio are just the two best.
Well, at center, and San Antonio's other world.
Yeah.
I mean, he's be interesting to see.
I don't understand him, though, being guarded by a 6'4" guy and shooting threes. I mean, the guy should just go to the low block and just keep getting fed, drop step left, drop step right, until they take the guy off him. I don't understand that, because Michael Jordan, if some 6'1" guy was guarding him, he would just go down to the block and abuse him.
Everybody wants to shoot threes. Everybody wants to shoot threes.
I know. I don't understand that. I don't understand the game. It's just horrible.
You are a statistician. You are our man. You are our numbers man. Somebody like you wrote one day.
But I don't think the game is that great when it's just threes and free throws.
I'm with you. But somebody like you, who said, you know what? If you shoot the ball from three-point land, you make it 30% of the time. If you shoot it from two-point land, you make it 45% of the time. So everybody's got that in their head, and all they want to do is shoot threes. Yeah. Whether you're off balance, whether you're on your back, whether you're leaning out of bounds, that's all they think about is that percentage. It has nothing to do with whether they get you the ball when you're supposed to be shooting it and not. You know, that's all everybody's convinced. They have one guy, when the Cavs were trying to come back last night, they come down, they execute this play. The guy comes in, he makes an inside move, and the guy goes, well, you're never going to catch up that way. Okay, then.
He launched these threes, and every turns the TV. People got to be turning the TV off to that.
Well, if you're down 6 or 7, and then you go down there and lob 4 bombs in a row, you miss all of them, the other guys come scoring down, now you're down 20.
Yeah, yeah. See, I think what happens is you're just putting too many eggs in your in that basket. I think the problem with the Knicks is they got Brunson. But if they're not hitting threes, I think they get blown out by the Spurs or OKC. I think they do, because they only got one guy that can really drive the lane.
Well, they were Brunson. The announcer was talking. They had somebody was pretty good. And like I said, I haven't watched him because I actually was boycotting because of the prime thing. But one guy, he goes, you know, you look at this team compared to last year. He goes, they filled in a couple of veterans, and everybody knows, he goes, it is by far the best basketball team out there, and how they all play together. They don't care who shoots. They all play defense. He goes, they've upped their team game dramatically since last year. And he goes, nobody's playing that kind of ball.
Well, I just think the East is pretty weak relative to those two teams. There's some really good teams out West. I think the route to the finals is through the West. And I just looking at eyeball test.
Yeah, but nobody
I really don't see really good teams in the East.
Nobody would debate that with you at all, except these guys have quietly.
Except Knicks fans?
Yeah, well, these guys have quietly come together
as
a team. I think they're way more of a team right now than Oklahoma.
I think Oklahoma is a pretty good team. When I've watched the games, I think Oklahoma and San Francisco or San Antonio. I keep saying San Francisco, but I think San Antonio and OKC. I think they play like New York, but I think they just got better and deeper benches.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the one guy manages.
It seems like those benches for OKC and San Antonio are just deep, and they play pretty unselfishly to me.
But the guy does. I used to play a real lot of basketball, and the whole idea was I was never that great of a scorer, but I had a reasonable first step. And if you're a guy that knows the defenses that's coming at you, you can find a way to draw the double team and know whose guy came to get you and where your guy is liable to be and get him the ball, it's a huge advantage. And I'm not so sure.
Yeah, that's how the Rockets won it 2 years in a row.
I'm not so sure I've seen anybody much better at that than this Dunson guy.
I mean, he
draws the
good.
Double team, and he finds the dude that is open, right? Yeah. And he doesn't care if he scores any points.
Yeah.
Which is rare.
But that's what Wimby should be doing. He should be on the low block when a 6'4 guy is guarding him. He's out there on the freaking elbow.
I don't disagree.
He's out there on the three-point line.
I don't disagree. I mean, it doesn't what good is it? You don't
just
have to
abuse the guy.
What is
abuse
it? 7'4"? Yeah. 7'5"? I mean, he
just drop steps and he makes it. I mean, bank shot 100%.
Yeah.
He could be 100% from the block when a 6'4 guy's guarding him.
Well,
but I don't know who's coaching these people. It just doesn't make any sense to me. It's like upside down basketball.
Well, if your defender usually is not going to follow you out there if you're big.
But that's what he does. He gets in his grill. He gets in his grill to force him to shoot a three or something, right?
Well, I mean,
he wants to make the three uncomfortable.
The first big guy who ever did that was Bill Laimbeer.
Yeah,
was a pretty good 3-point shooter, and he went out there and guess what? Nobody would follow him out there. He's wide open.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it was. Well, how does this? The problem is every further we go down this road, and Carl is always talking about, well, these numbers get bigger and bigger. I mean, every month, I was stunned at the amount of margin loans last month, $80 billion. That's like the biggest.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
I mean, what?
That was the increase, right?
That was the increase. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't see where we've got government picking favorites in these stocks, which I think is not so good. But where, you know, what happens to bring the mess down? And plus, I don't want the mess down. I don't want my clients losing money. I'd rather somebody.
Well, people can make money going down.
Well, right? Yeah, but.
I think it's harder to do that now with all these different tools the Fed uses.
Well, and before
2008, I think it was easier to kind of time when the peaks were coming.
On a relative scale, the way I have most of my people, a lot of my people retired and so forth, so I got everybody protected. Okay, so the market drops 50%, you know, I'm gonna predict my guys lose 5 to 6, depending on, you know, how protected we are and that kind of thing, but maybe 10. So we'll have plenty of scratch to be buying low when nobody else will. But you know what? It's still not winning. I don't want that. Yeah. I don't want to see that. I know guys would say everybody else is down 50. You're only down 8. You did a good job. Wait a minute. I don't show up to lose, right? So, but I'm not. I don't have like extra puts or anything like that. I don't have a bunch of shorts or anything like that. But I mean, so I don't really want anything to collapse. Yet I know when I see something like this Micron, you know, for God's sake, the thing is up $62 today. That's the stock. How many years the stock didn't even trade $62? Forget. We're talking about crazy world here.
Well, yeah, I think with Micron, there's a lot of local stories about Micron building out a new, because we live in northern, we live in basically southern Virginia. You know, we're like 15, 20 miles from Virginia. So we get a lot of the news from the state of Virginia. And Micron's building this really incredible manufacturing facility up there in Virginia. So I think maybe some of that has to do with
the fact that
they're actually building and they're selling.
I'm sure it is. And they could be...
Well, there's two parts. It's that and the fact that the Fed is printing this money and the money's leaking out in the form of these loans to non-depository financial institutions.
Well, Carl, maybe Kevin, maybe you. I'm looking at Micron. I'm looking at NVIDIA. I'm looking at Intel. I'm looking at AMD. Look at all Palantir. You know, look at all these companies. And I would never be the guy who said, "Boy, you got to short Micron. They can end up being the tremendous winner. But what I will pretty much guarantee off my experience in 2000, they can't all triple. We'd have to get another planet for them all to triple. They're too big, right? I mean, you know, could Micron double their revenue and all of a sudden they're nine times revenue per share? Yes. I don't know. I mean, they could have they could have an invention sitting on their shelf that only a few people know about that I don't know about. Okay, but if they do, then NVIDIA can't, because they're going to have to get some of their stuff. If Huawei takes over the whole other side of the planet, well then NVIDIA can't. I mean, they you know what I'm saying? They can't all. Same. I did the same calculation in 2000. Now I went through the top seven stocks, of which only one or two are even big now. And I said, okay, any one of these guys could double or triple. If all seven of them double or triple, we'd have to conquer the world. We don't have our GDP. It's like the whole GDP, for God's sake.
Yeah.
There'd be nobody else left.
I wish I had the power to pick the stock. Like,
oh, me too. God.
The guy, the father, played by Christopher Walken in Blast from the Past.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, such a good movie. It's so funny. But Christopher Walken is just a genius. I love the guy to death.
You know, he's supposed to be.
Apparently, he bought like AT&T stock.
Yeah, he's supposed to be a total wacko.
Yeah, but I mean, he is so funny.
Oh yeah,
and deadpan humor, just incredible. But in the movie, they're underground for 30 years, right? Because they thought the Russians had bombed the United States, and they lived underground. And Brendan Fraser, his son, needs to go out. He's the Adam. He needs to go find his Eve. And he's like in his 30s, and he acts like he's 8 because he's only been around his parents in entire adult life. But he finds out that he has all the stock in AT&T. And, you know, what has it done since his dad bought it in the 1960s and 50s, right? It has done like what Walmart stock had done, right? I think Walmart split like, I don't know.
Hopefully the old man was smart enough to put him on the dividend reinvestment plan, and the dividend checks weren't going to some house they didn't even live anymore. Just saying.
Yeah. But what I would like to do is, one way to avoid the mishaps of an AI world where, you know, all these standardized jobs are being done by robots and AI, and we don't know really what the new jobs are going to be for humans. We know that manufacturing is probably going to go away. We know that a lot of these white-collar jobs are, you know, going to be gone. One way to counteract that is to buy stock in the company that survives over the next and thrives over the next 30 or 40 years, right? But which company is that? Which one of these companies is going to be that AT&T in the movie Blast from the Past? And maybe what you have to do is you have to spread it around to what you think are going to be the companies that survive in 30 years.
Well, I would say, you know, we did this about 10 years ago on the show, you know, and all the people around, Kathy Durbin was still on a few. We said, okay, name me 10 companies that you think will not only be around, but will be somewhat dominant 20 years from now. Everybody had a real struggle with that, because we were, you know, because if you looked at the ones in 2000, not many of those around. When I started the business, you're too young. Remember Morgan Stanley's Nifty 50?
I don't remember that. Maybe I was too young for that. I was probably drinking too many beers in the Navy.
Yeah, they had 50 stocks that were going to take over the world. You know what? Next Tuesday, Ricky, write this down, because next Tuesday I'll dig it up. You don't recognize 10 of the stocks in there. There was stuff like Kodak, there was
Xerox. Yeah, that's the typical thing. Sony. There's so much turnover, right? Yeah. They go out of business or they're bought up.
Yeah, it was Xerox. I mean, Polaroid, God. Yeah. But they were one of the hottest stocks on the floor when I came into business. Who the hell even knows what Polaroid is? How many kids even heard the name? I mean, they just go. And but what Kathy dug into, and she did her thing. I'm not saying the female thing, but it was stocks that made like Tide, stocks that made like toilet paper, stuff that people are still going to need 20 years from now. Lou, of course, was all over Lockheed and all the people that are making military stuff. It was whatever. I mean, but most people could name five. You start naming 10, it's kind of tough. But now we've come.
I think one thing we've learned about this. One thing I think is an important lesson we've learned is, how is warfare going to be conducted in the future? And I think we're seeing the difficulty of the world's most powerful military going up against an enemy in Iran who at this point just basically has drones, right? Well, I think the future is going to be drone warfare.
Well, I would say if
Ukraine is having success against Russia. I don't think the country with the biggest, baddest aircraft carriers is going to be necessarily the one that wins the wars. It's going to be whoever has the best drone technology, best AI, best robotics.
I was actually, I wasn't going to bug you, but I had some wild thought yesterday. We're driving back and forth to the cemetery, and I would almost go look.
We're going to have cemeteries for robots, yeah, right?
I wonder if Hal would comment, are any of our old aircraft carriers, the small oil ones, are those able to be, you know, pulled out of storage? I think your answer to this was no. But if we had something that size, and we had, you know, 20 regular jets and 500 drones on the thing, I'm not so sure that wouldn't be something we wouldn't mind having four or five of instead of the
an aircraft carrier with drone technology, incredible drone technology. I think that would be really effective
with maybe a couple of the things that they go up in the air to the big AWACS or whatever.
Put a drone manufacturing facility on aircraft carrier.
Yeah,
boy, you would have something right there, right?
But you'd need
3D printers.
I think you'd need some of the planes like the AWACS so you can guide the drones and those kinds of things. Yeah. But you probably want a few fighters to protect the damn thing. But you could. I don't think you need the Gerald R. Ford to be effective. No, I'd rather have five of these other ones than one of those.
Yeah. Well, I think Terminator has that right. I think the movie Terminator. I don't necessarily believe the movie The Terminator because you know when you boil it down to the causes of war, I think the causes of war are people and machines. Unlike people, will never feel like inadequate. They'll never have to worry about the psychological effects of being a human. And when people are hungry, they turn into animals. I don't think you're going to ever have that with robots and AI. I think in a world where AI develops in a free market economy, where AIs have to compete with other AIs, I don't foresee any issues. The problem is when the AIs are run by the state. And that's the world I fear, is the state running the AI.
Well, we're getting there.
And unfortunately, I think that's the way Trump is kind of positioning the control over AI in the United States.
He wants to run the world, not just us.
Yeah, I know. That's the problem with the AI, is who's going to control it. If it's a free market, AI is going to be like a really smart dude that has to compete with other really smart dudes.
Did you,
I don't worry about that world.
You don't, maybe you know it, maybe you don't. You know, you just like quoted the Pope's encyclical.
Oh, I did. I don't read much of the Pope.
Well, he just said the same thing you did. Who's going to control this?
Yeah, who's going to control it? That's the thing I fear, right?
I think he's a
pretty
smart guy. I
don't want China controlling it, and I don't want the United States government controlling it.
I think he's a pretty smart. There's two comments that I remember about war.
Well, he's from Chicago, so, you know. Yeah. Chicago, bang, bang.
Well, he went to Mendel, my buddy Bill Murphy. Two quotes on war. One was a priest that gave a sermon at St. Bernadette's, and he was a guest priest, and he was never invited back. And he said, most wars fought in the name of religion were really economical.
They were, yeah, definitely.
And then Mike Royko said, you can boil war down into one line. They got it, we want it, let's take it.
Yep, exactly.
And that's really kind of what it all
is. And there's the argument against war. When troops don't cross borders, or when goods cross borders freely, I added the freely, when goods cross borders, troops don't need to. So the best way to run the economy is to trade with everybody.
Yeah, but they do anyway. Somebody's trading, you know, more than I. You know, this whole thing about AI, the thing that really, it doesn't really frost me, but every chairman comes out and says all the people they're going to get rid of, they don't need anymore. They never look in the mirror and say, we don't need a chairman making what does Musk make? 500.
Yeah,
he makes what, $50 million a day or something. What's the number the guy's making?
If we
got AI, what do we need him for?
Well, that's the problem with AI. I don't think AI can ever be truly creative.
I don't think it can either.
Like when I have discussions with an AI, it is obvious the AI is just scraping the internet. And because it's scraping the internet, it's like a 12-year-old that is just really, really smart and can read and hold stuff. But I don't think it can be truly creative. I think it's just copying. AI at this point is just artificial copying, AC. It's just copying what humans have done. So I don't think an AI will ever be great as an entrepreneur. I think AI is going to always have to be managed, because really it's a really good tool.
You know, we have a, I don't know if I told you this, we have a sometime producer of the show, I won't mention any names, who just got a new job with this marketing firm, right? And he says to me, so what are you doing? He goes, well, I'm writing articles that people are never really going to read. And I go, wait, you're doing what? He goes, I'm writing these articles and I'm publishing them on, you know, like X and all these things. And so that AI picks up.
He's trying to train the AI.
He's trying to pick up AI to pick it up and make it seem like, you know, yeah, like PTI Securities is really Merrill Lynch kind of thing. Which, yeah, you know, maybe I should try. I don't know. I don't want
to
be
there. You get a bot to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
You can flood the internet with that.
Yeah, well, that's what. So he says, so I go, how do you write the articles? He goes, well, I use AI. He goes, wait a minute. You're using AI?
Well, I think what he's doing is he's directing the AI. He's telling it how to write it and what to write.
Yeah, well, right? But he's using AI to write the article to fool AI.
Well, maybe it's like, you know, like, what was it, Stalin or one of Stalin's predecessors who said they're gonna kill the capitalist with the rope. They're going to hang the capitalist with the rope the capitalist makes.
Without a doubt.
Maybe that's what he's trying to do, right?
Well, I mean, this whole look at the dance we're doing with China. It is so similar to the dance we did in the 30s with Germany.
Yeah. Or Japan.
Not as much. That's more of a... It was easy to say no to them because it's...
Well, we're chucking Japan off with by barricading them from oil.
Well, but yeah, okay, but...
We're an economic war.
We had every reason to do that after what they were doing to China and other
places. You
know,
the United States actually sided with Hitler because our foe was really Russia at first. But then we found out how horrible... then Germany invades, you know, nations within Europe. But we initially were aligned with Hitler because our enemy was really Russia at first.
Well, we weren't exactly aligned. We had some people here.
I mean, that was just early. That was really early on.
But we had here. Who was
about how evil Hitler was?
Who's what's the name guy? Lindbergh and Joe Kennedy and all kinds of people. Just they couldn't. They were just salivating at the amount of stuff they could sell to Germany. And they. Really,
oh yeah, we wanted to be allies with Germany. And we wanted to maintain those relationships.
If there was going to be united Europe, just think of what we could sell to them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Hitler, you know, he obviously went too far too fast in terms of, yeah. But his thing was always one of...
But that's the thing about a human. A human will make that mistake. I don't think an AI will make that mistake unless it's being managed
Hitler. It's always going to be managed.
Yeah.
There's no independent thought in a computer.
Yeah.
But, you know, where is this all when our... I think when we... Pour money into how far? Let's put it this way: everybody in the show seems to think someday there'll be a redress of this. Hopefully, it won't be 1929. And in enough people, my clients, enough people, and you know, family, you name it, enough people are in the market now to where it's not like 1929. We're only 7% were in the market. So, I mean, if you were to talk to somebody with a big fat IRA and say these policies are all wrong because the market's going straight up, he's going to look you right in the eye and go, what are you talking about? That's what they're supposed to do, right? I've had people tell me that. I said, I can't believe what the Fed's doing, just pouring money in the system, and they go, well, and the markets are going up. The guy goes, well, I got you know, $500,000 IRA. I want it to go up. Whatever they're doing is fine with me. I mean, yeah. So it's not like there's a – you and I don't want markets going down. I don't want my clients getting hurt. But I also know if we take this to the extreme, someday it might go down a lot more than anybody wants.
Well, the Austrian business cycle theory says that when the central bank expands money supply, all kinds of malinvestments are created. And we don't know what those malinvestments are until that monetary stimulus is pulled. And once that monetary stimulus is pulled and stock markets crash, then we realize which ones are the malinvestments.
But the malinvestment...
Unfortunately, I think we got a lot of malinvestment that we don't really know what is malinvestment.
The malinvestment right now is the market.
Yeah.
I mean, $80 billion in loans in 1 month? That's the market. That's the mail investment. Nobody cares what the names of the stocks are.
Well, I think Austrians generally consider mail investment like more like hard assets, like apartment complexes that were being built, condominiums that were being built in San Diego and Miami. They were mostly nobody lived in them, right, during the financial crisis.
I don't disagree, but right now, the mail investment might just be the market.
Yeah, it could be. Well, yeah, it's definitely one of them, right?
Well, I mean, it's certainly not
down to the companies that think they're going to make all this money, yet when the inflation really kicks in and the Fed has to pull back, it finally has to legitimately pull back. We're going to realize how many of these companies have been investing in malinvestments, and I think it's going to be widespread.
Well, I think there's also, I won't use the term malinvestment, although I just did, in housing. And every week we have Audrey or Nancy Ann, and if you listen carefully to them, virtually, you know, a lot of what is transpiring in that area are people that bought a house at 150 20 years ago, 25 years ago. It's now worth four something. They sell it and they buy another place cash. The mail investment isn't.
I think that might be one of the drivers. I think that's more of a driver of people moving to places like North Carolina and Idaho than any other thing. Because when you live in one of these cities where you've got this huge appreciation in your home, and you can sell it and pay off whatever mortgage you have left over, and you can go to a state like North Carolina or Idaho. Idaho, I think, is the fastest growing state in the union.
But you're
right
still
now.
You're not getting the bargains there you used to get. I mean, people would.
You're not getting them. Yeah. You're not getting the bargains. You know, in the past, you might have been able to buy two houses in Florida.
Yeah,
now you buy one house.
Well, I know some of the people that Audrey sold houses to years ago. When I say years ago, 4 to 8 years ago, were able to buy a much more of a house in a nice place in Indiana.
Yeah,
I don't know that you can do that anymore. You might still be a little more expensive, but you're not selling a place for 400 here and going to buy a place nicer there for two. That's not happening. I mean, the cost of plus right now to build a house costs you way more than that. For God's sake!
Adam was talking about that in Idaho. He wanted to buy a bigger piece of property and a new house, and he decided just to remodel his current house because his current house. It's worth like $400,000, which is crazy for Idle Falls. But his interest rate is still just 2.85%. So he's just going to remodel his main floor. And then he's thinking about buying his house, and his property butts up against a farm. He wants to go talk to the farmer who owns the land behind his house and just buy an acre of property from him and not annex it to his property, just a place where he can build a big shop. But that's what he's doing.
The number is, I did some work in 2007 regarding housing prices vis-a-vis median income, and it was, you know, of course I have real estate people that are close to me. I never got anywhere with the argument saying, you know, we're at the point here where the median, only 15% of the population can afford a median house.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a problem. Well, I did it again a couple of weeks ago, just off the top of my head. It's way worse now than it was in 2007. 2007, the average house price was the median was $235, and the median only in order to buy that home, if somebody gave you the down payment. So if somebody gave you $46,000, say your old man or your mom wrote you the check, or if you'd saved up for it. You need $85,000 to manage that home, okay, to get the mortgage. And the mortgages were like 6%. Well, now the price of the house is $410,000. And I'm going to say, since the interest rates now are roughly the same as they were then, that you're going to need, you're going to need almost twice as much. So you're going to need $150,000, $160,000. If you use the same numbers, but you can't because the insurance is probably doubled. And the taxes have probably doubled or more.
Yeah.
So you probably need $185,000 if you have the $80,000 to put down. How many people, what percentage of the population makes $185,000?
Not very many.
Not very many. I mean, individually, it's probably 8%. As a family, it's probably, 30%. But now, if you have any kids, and now both both of the parents are wage owners. Then you got to add the price of daycare, you know, two cars, all the other stuff, so two people can get to work. So that's not an even. You can't just
wife's got to have a reliable van to taxi everybody around in.
Yeah, so you can't. But I mean, you can't just.
And you can't do the work on that new van.
Well, I'm not saying anybody should have a stay home parent, but I'm saying if both people work and you've got three kids, you can't ignore the fact that you're paying for help. You're two people have to be today's world. You have to dress up. In those days, two people had to dress up. You had to have cars. You have transportation. You had to pay for parking. I mean, you got to take. It's not. You don't just double those salaries, right? You can't do that because you're paying for childcare. Which is what? I mean, you can't get childcare for less than $25 an hour, can you?
Yeah.
I mean, so it's, you know, it's not a net gainer, but the question that always comes would be somebody who's investing and how many more months of $80 billion, $100 billion, $120 billion margin loans a month can we get before something bad happens? Obviously, it's not a war.
I think it's inevitable that it does come crumbling down, but the question is when, and I don't know if anybody can determine when that's going to happen.
I don't think you can. I mean, we've already gone through. You would have thought COVID would have done it. It didn't.
Yeah.
You would have thought that somehow in Japan, this fiasco.
Kevin Warsh is going to be able to figure it out.
No, but what about how does Japan? Of course, those guys. That's a little different than us. The banks own a boatload of stock, so you've essentially refloated the whole banking industry with record numbers in the stock market, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, it's a little different program here, but all this is kind of tied together. And it's kind of eerie. It's just kind of eerie. But in the meantime. Guess what? My guys are having a pretty good day. So, I mean, gold's up, silver's up. I think every stock that my guys own today is up today. So,
well, I think it's going to be a point where the top 1% have it so good, and everybody else has it so bad.
Yeah,
that there's going to be this rage, and I think we're starting to see the seeds of that rage with voters behind Trump and voters behind guys like Mamdani. I think that rage, that support for these kinds of candidates is the rage that's starting to bubble up.
Is there any chance we get somebody who would come common sense in the middle? I don't care what party it is.
I don't think there is. I think, you know, the extremes nominate. You know, they're the ones that participate in the election process in the primary season. The extremes nominate.
My guys Wayne and Andrew are starting to lob the idea that with some of the people that have been giving all these speeches and stuff in Congress, there's actually a couple of older moderate Democrats that are starting to make a name for themselves that are not woke, they're not anything like that. They're starting to make a name for themselves, and they're kind of hoping. And I'd like to see.
Well, the problem I have with voting for a Democrat in North Carolina is who are they going to caucus with? They're going to caucus with the loony birds in California. I mean, the California Democrats are freaking loons. They're loons.
Not every single one is.
Yeah. Most of them are really loony.
I don't care if it's a more moderate Democrat or more moderate Republican. I don't want to vote for
anybody. I would vote for a Democrat if I knew that New York Democrats or California Democrats weren't going to be running the show. But I'm afraid I'd
vote for a Republican if I didn't think the Trumpers were going to run the show either. Yeah. So it's the same thing.
Well, look what Trump's doing with guys like Massey. I mean, he's pushing them out.
That's gonna backfire on him.
I think maybe it does. Hopefully it does. Yeah.
Anyway, SP Futures up 50. NASDAQ Futures up 343. Hal, as usual, good stuff. Next time we go further on that paper, let me know because I want to talk about it. And by the way, I think you talked to the Pope about the AI. You guys had almost the exact same wordage.
Well, I think we're just reading similar kinds of things.
Maybe he's reading your stuff.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe
he's going to. Maybe he might take this thing back and correct it after listening to you this morning.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe he's listening to you. Maybe he's listening to the show.
Anyway, back tomorrow. Nice job, Ricky. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.